Shai Shef Yeshlita here, joining us to share words of Torah. We have to, first of all, say thank you to Yeshiva University, who arranged this, who made this possible. We have a really blessed relationship with Yeshiva University, and Rav Schachter is one of the, he's unique in his own right. And nothing chalila v'chalila take away from him, but he's one of the many, many people and Torah personalities that you can be and will be exposed to in the Stern College. I just learned, I knew Rav Schachter is a prominent figure in the assistant rabbi in Young Israel of Woodmere. I knew that he began teaching in Stern College and in YU and NYC, but also in Stern College. What I didn't know, what I learned just a moment ago, is that one of the many things he does in his phenomenally busy schedule is sits in the Beis Medrash to talk to people like you, to be able to ask, you could ask questions, to have someone to be exposed to a Talmud Chacham, like Rav Schachter, to ask him shaylos, to ask him personal questions and guidance, in addition to all the Torah personalities that come into Stern and all the and the couples there, the Fine family who are there this year, and the Schoenbrunn family who are there this year. But to have someone like Rav Schachter, literally the Beis Medrash for you. He has a lot of time to learn on his own, but to be in the Beis Medrash with you is something that's it's really, really incredible. And I'm gonna go now, if it's okay, with YU. I'm just gonna go now and apply to YU. I apply to Stern College. I don't know if I'm gonna get in. And I hope I get into Stern. I don't know if I'll get in, but it really is a great bracha. To introduce Rav Shai Schachter here for the very first time in talking for women, and God willing, won't be the last. And we're, like I said, we're very blessed. I know that Rav Schachter has a phenomenally busy schedule, and to be able to squeeze in Shalvim for Women and to share words of Torah with us, we are grateful to him as well as YU for making it happen. And without further ado, we are going to introduce Rav Shai Schachter.
How long do you think I'm speaking? So good morning, everybody. And it's a real, real pleasure to be here. Thank you, Rabbi Goldsmith. It's really the kavod gadol. What can I say? There's no greater place in the world to be than in Yerushalayim. And the Gemara tells us, Asara kaven yofi yardu la'olam. There were 10 measures of beauty that came into the world. 9 of them were taken by Yerushalayim, and one of them is for the rest of the world. And here we are, in Yerushalayim, taking advantage of the beauty that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given this amazing city. And we get to see and interact and have the opportunity to experience Od Yeshvu Zakenu Zakenos Mirachobos Yerushalayim, to see the prophecies coming true and to watch all of this and experience it and to be a part of it. Ki Vachar Hashem B'tzion Iva L'moshav Lo. How lucky we are. How lucky you are. Ashrechem. Ure'e B'tu Yerushalayim Kol Yimei Chayechem. You should have the opportunity to take advantage of the beauty of Yerushalayim all the time. And really, especially to learn in Yerushalayim, Ki Mitzion Teitzei Sarah Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. There's no greater gift than to be here to learn Torah together. It's beautiful to see some familiar faces. I don't know all of you. I'm happy to spend a little bit of time afterward. I am here. I think the next year I'm giving is in. Well, we have some time afterward. I think we have like 40 minutes, 30 minutes after we're done. So I'm happy to talk to anybody. I'm happy to discuss anything that's on your minds. Originally, they told me the plan was I was supposed to give a short shiur, and then we were going to have a panel. Then they said that they're now replacing me with a women's-only panel. So it sounds like that's going to be a phenomenal morning. I'm sorry I'm not going to be able to stay. But really, you should take advantage of how lucky you are to have such great mechanchim, mechanchot, and such really, really wonderful personalities here in your seminary, leading you and guiding you to a life of Torah and mitzvah. So I was asked to talk this morning about something that is supposed to launch a wonderful day of learning here. And what I was given as a topic was women in halacha. I don't know where to start, and I really don't know where to end. I'm not sure how long you want to give me, a few weeks. So let's at least get started with something. I don't know what everyone else throughout the course of the day is going to speak about, and I hope there's not too much repetition. I don't know what the topics are. But let me begin with this. Maybe you'll say it's a little bit of a controversial topic, but I think if it finds itself in the Gemara and in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, it can't really be controversial. It's something that we need to know about. It's something we need to understand. So the Gemara, when it discusses the whole notion, the whole idea of women with regard to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, let's use that as the launching pad for our discussion today. You've come here to make a commitment to spend your time learning for the year. And this is something that I'm sure for many of you is not a first. I'm sure many of you went to religious high schools and had the opportunity to learn a whole lot of Torah. I just heard that there's somebody here from Berlin who's learning the original Rehersh and the original German. That's amazing. It brings me back to the way I grew up. A whole lot of you, a whole lot of the people in my neighborhood in Washington Heights were actually from Germany and were able to read the original Rehersh. We were like the only family in the back of Shul who had to sit there with the English and feel uncomfortable. So really, there's so much learning that we do. And the question is, what is the Torah's perspective when it comes to women's learning and study of Torah? And that is a very fundamental question, especially when we're going to be spending an entire year learning Torah. Let us try to think about what the Torah actually says with regard to our obligation, or perhaps not. So we begin with the Gemara Maseches Kiddushin, Chaf Tes Amud Beis, where the Gemara clearly says, from a pasuk that we say every day in Kriyashma, V'limadatem osamez b'neichem l'daber bam, we have an obligation to teach our children Torah. Says the Gemara, b'neichem v'lo b'noseichem, we have an obligation to teach our sons, we do not have an obligation to teach our daughters. Which means that it would seem that there's no obligation to teach a woman Torah, but there would be nothing wrong with teaching a woman Torah. After all, there are many mitzvahs throughout the course of our experience as Jews that we may not have a strict obligation to fulfill, but yet we have a right to fulfill if we choose to do it. How many women in here went to hear the shofar this year? Were you obligated to do so? Yes? No?
No.
You went to do it anyway. So, if I would just stop here, I would say the Gemara tells us, maybe we don't have an obligation to learn Torah as women. However, there should be nothing wrong with it. It sounds like it's something that would be a good idea, no different than any other mitzvah that we would volunteer to do. However, we look at an alternative Gemara where we give a very different kind of perspective about this very issue. And the Gemara in Maseches Sota, in the third parak, has a big discussion in the Mishnah there, where the Mishnah there is talking about what happens when a woman unfortunately has to come to the Beis HaMikdash because she has to drink the Mayim HaMarim. It's a very terrible, horrific story. And the Gemara says that you have a couple where the husband is unsure about what kind of activity his wife is involved in, and he suspects that maybe she's spending time with somebody else. And a terrible, terrible story. The whole marriage falls apart, and the Gemara says they have to go to the Beis HaMikdash, and she has to drink some kind of potion that they put together. Be it as it may, the Gemara says, at that time, we will see immediately after she takes this drink whether or not she is in fact guilty of what he is assuming that she did. That's what the Gemara says. However, the Gemara then tells us there are some times when you can have a schus, when a woman can have some kind of extra special merit, that even if she is guilty as charged, she will not suffer a consequence as a result of the schus that she has. And what is that schus, says the Gemara? There's a machlokis in the Tanaim, there's a discussion among the Tanaim. Do we assume that maybe every father should teach his daughter Torah in order that she should be able to have a schus? In order that, should she ever unfortunately end up in that place in the Beis HaMikdash, having to take that drink, being accused by her husband, at least she'll have a schus where she won't be punished for the terrible thing she's being accused for? That, says the Gemara, is one of the opinions of the Tanaim. And on the other hand, the Gemara says, one of the other Tanaim says, this does not sound like a good idea. Because her belezer Omer kala malamed bita Torah kila lomda tiflus, says the Gemara that it would be inappropriate for a parent to teach his daughter Torah. And that is what the Gemara's takeaway message is. So we have two conflicting versions. On the one hand, the Gemara says a father does not have an obligation to teach his daughter, but there seems to be nothing wrong. On the other hand, the Gemara here has a machlokes atanaim, whether we would say there's something actually negative about teaching one's daughter Torah. So this finds itself in the pages of the Shulchan Aruch and in the Rambam as well. And the Rambam paskins this in Hilchos Talmud Torah, where he writes, like the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, that a father not only does not have an obligation to teach his daughter Torah, but we also assume that perhaps he should not teach his daughter Torah. Now, everyone hang in there till we finish up this point. But if you look clearly in the Rambam does say that. Maybe we've never actually studied the original Gemara and the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, but that's clearly what it says. There is no debate about what is stated in the Gedolei HaPoskim. It's clear. So the Rambam tells us, like the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, and the Shulchan Aruch in Yerodeyasim and Reish Mem Vav, which is all about Hilchos Talmud Torah, the Shulchan Aruch there says almost verbatim the words of the Rambam. Now, the Tur quotes this as well. One of the commentaries on the side of the Tur was the son of, anybody know?
The Rush.
Tur was the son of the Rush. Amazing. I actually was thinking next semester in Stern College, I asked these kinds of questions in my class. Anybody know, like, was the Tur Rishon and Achron? Was he lived at the same time as Moshe Rabbeinu? Did he live the same? You know, when I grew up, my father, whenever he used to learn with us, we would very often not pay attention. We were kids like everyone else. And in the middle, he realized we weren't paying attention. So he would say, do you understand what I'm saying? We would say, no. He said, okay, let's start back from the beginning. Hashem created the world. 6 days of creation. Then he gave us a Torah. And then there was Moshe Rabbeinu. And he would go through the whole Shalshelas HaMesorah and then bring us back to where we were up to in like a span of 3.5 minutes. We'd be like, okay, so now we're up to here. And I like to try, whenever we teach Torah, to try to just get a sense and a feeling and an understanding of who it is that we're talking about, who are we quoting, why are we quoting this, what relevance does it have, when did they live. And it's important for us just to get a context, to get an overview, to get an understanding and an appreciation of who it is that's speaking to us. And as we know, you know, my father likes to say that when Rav Soloveitchik used to quote the Rambam, he felt as if the Rambam was in the room. He felt like he was having a conversation with the Rambam and the Ravid, and he was discussing back and forth. And that's the feeling that we have whenever we learn. But as long as you have the context of who it is that you're talking about, it makes it a little bit easier to actually have an engaging conversation with all the Gedolei HaRishonim and all the Tanaim and everyone else. So the Rambam was one of the greatest of the Rishonim. The Rush was another one of the Gedolei HaRishonim. And the son of the Rush was the Tur. And the Tur wrote one of the most authoritative Svarim in Halacha. The Tur has not only the basic Halacha itself, which is the middle of the page, but you have on the side the commentary of the Prisha. The Prisha actually wrote three very significant and important Svarim, a commentary on the Tur himself. The Prisha lived in the 1500s, and the Prisha wrote not only his commentary, the Prisha, but also he wrote the Drisha, two very similar names. And then on Shulchan Aruch HaShem Mishpat, he wrote the Sma, the very, very important work that really elucidates so much of what is quoted in Shulchan Aruch itself. So the Tur there quotes this halacha of the Rambam, quotes what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, the Tur doesn't quote the Shulchan Aruch, but the Tur quotes as verbatim, as the Rambam has it, that a father should not teach his daughter Torah. However, the Prisha there is very quick to comment that not so fast. Let's see what he says. Writes the Prisha, I'm sorry that I didn't have a chance to make source sheets or do anything. I was actually preparing this on the plane. I had no idea what I was supposed to speak about until I got here. And I was so lucky that I had Rabbi Turetsky on the plane with me. And I said to him, you know, I'm scheduled to speak in Shalom for Women. They told me there's some kind of Yom Iyun. Anybody know what I'm supposed to talk about? It just said a very generic topic, like women, halacha, something. He's like, that's a good question. Let me find out. So he started to talk around, and I had an opportunity to prepare on the plane. The downside of that is I wasn't able to prepare anything for all of you. So you'll trust me when I tell you that the Tur writes the following in Yerodeya, Simen Reish Mem Vav. He says that when the Rambam says, Tzivu Chachamim Shelo Yilmod as Bito Torah, says the Tur, Mepnei Sharov HaNashim, says the Tur, if you look carefully in the Rambam says that most women are not equipped to learn Torah. And that's why the Rambam says the father shouldn't teach them, because of what value is it? However, says the Prisha, if you are not from that category of people, if you are a person who knows that, yes, I can learn Torah, I can embrace it, I can master Torah, I can really become something special from the study of Torah, then of course you should learn it. And the Torah says that's obvious. The Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara never meant to exclude that scenario. And that is why the Torah maybe can only be in a very specific set of circumstances. In fact, one of the Gedolei Achronim of our generation was Rav Shach. Rav Shach was the Rosh Hashiva in Paravish, and Rav Shach wrote a number of Svarim on the Rambam. And in his commentary on the Rambam, in the Sefer Avi Yezri, he has the same comment as the Prisha, where he says the Rambam is not saying there's any prohibition, but rather the Rambam is saying Rov HaNashim, many of the women don't have the ability that the Rambam is describing. And you'll understand in a minute why. It's not because anyone's looking down on women. You'll understand in a second why this is the case. But that is what the Prisha explains, and that is why he says that perhaps a woman who feels that she's not from that category of people certainly has the right and the ability and should be encouraged to do so. Now, the Maharil was the father of Chachmei Ashkenaz. So many of the Psakim of the Rama lived in Krakow in Poland in the 1500s, so many of the Psakim of the Rama come from the Maharil. The Maharil asks a very obvious question. Do we expect women to observe mitzvos? Do we expect women to observe Shabbos? It's not a trick question.
Yes.
Of course. Brishut Harabanit. I don't know who you are, but... Hi, what a pleasure. Okay. Thank you for having me. Such a pleasure. So, we expect that women are going to observe Shabbos. We expect that women are going to observe Kashrus. We expect that women are going to observe many, many of the halachos throughout their experience as Jews. Well, the Maharil says, how exactly do you expect a woman to be able to observe any mitzvahs throughout the experiences of her life if, in fact, she's not going to be learning Torah? How are you supposed to observe anything without learning it? Pretty obvious question, isn't it? And I wonder, the Maharil came along right before the Rama in the 1400s, 1500s. How come nobody before the Maharil asked this question? I don't understand. We have a Gemara, we have the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, and everybody just takes it for granted that women shouldn't be taught Torah. Says the Maharil, I don't understand. How is a woman supposed to know how to live life as a Jew? What is the expectation? How is one supposed to do that? And the Maharil gives two answers. The first one is so troubling to me. The Maharil says the first answer is, you know, women are going to have the opportunity to learn just by osmosis. They're going to live in their homes, and they're going to be able to pick up whatever they need to know about Jewish life from everybody who's observing all the mitzvahs around them. And therefore, says the Maharil, there's still no reason to teach a woman Torah because, after all, they have religious parents, and they have religious neighbors, and they have a wonderful community, and there's no reason to be concerned that maybe they're not going to know how to live as Jews. Nothing, no problem, says the Maharil. Is that really the case? Anybody here know anything about Bruria? Bruria was the wife of Reb Meir. Reb Meir was like on the rating of Tanaim. Would you say like one of the more prominent Tanaim, I would say. So Reb Meir was quite a phenomenal person. The descriptions that the Gemara gives about his wife, Bruria, is that she was pretty unbelievable on her own. Nobody ever said a negative word about Bruria. The Gemara Misachim, I believe, says that Bruria spent hours and hours, days, trying to figure out some kind of halacha about something that they were discussing in the Beis Medrash, and Bruria was learning it, and it doesn't say that Bruria just knew how to live life as a Jew because she had people around her who taught her how to do kashrus, who taught her how to keep Shabbos. No! Bruria studied everything. So the Maharil asks, I don't understand. You mean to tell me that Bruria was a b'dievet? You mean to tell me that Bruria was doing something that was really not accepted by her generation? How can that be? And not only that, there's an amazing story that the Gemara tells about Chizkiyo HaMelech. The Gemara tells us Chizkiyo HaMelech was one of the greatest Jews to ever live. And the Gemara says he was the son of a Rasha. His father was evil, his father was wicked. The Gemara tells us that his father was Nal Dalsos Batek Nasios Abate Medrashos. Chizkiyo HaMelech's father, who was the Melech al Yisrael, locked up the halls of all these shuls, all the schools. He didn't let anybody learn Torah at all. He didn't let anybody connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He actually closed off the roads to Yerushalayim and encouraged everyone to serve Avodah Zarah. This is the kind of person he was. Then Chizkiyo HaMelech becomes king and he realizes, I need to do something. This is my responsibility. Now I'm the king. I can change the tide. And he did. And the Gemara says, Natz Cherev Bekarka. He takes a sword, he takes a spear, and he puts it into the ground and he says, anyone who doesn't learn Torah, yidaker becheref. And everyone took him seriously. He's the melech. He made an edict that everyone needed to learn Torah. And the Gemara then goes on to say that they were badku midan va'ad be'er sheva. I think the Gemara uses that lashon, that they went through the entire span of Eretz Yisrael and they did not find a man or a woman, a young boy or a young girl, an adult male, an adult female, who didn't know everything there was to know about Torah. Chizkiyahu HaMelech encouraged everyone to learn Torah equally. So don't you see, says the Maharil, that obviously this is something that the Gemara assumes was a wonderful thing that Chizkiyahu HaMelech did. After all, the Gemara is talking about the praise of Chizkiyahu HaMelech for what he infused into the Jewish people at that time. So how can you say there's anything negative about it? And that is the discussion in the Maharil, to where he comes to the conclusion and he says that, obviously, there is never a debate when it comes to the mitzvos that a woman is going to have to observe in her lifetime throughout her experience. For example, the laws of kashrus. For example, the laws of Shabbos. For example, all the other halachos that one needs to know on a day-to-day basis. Hilchos tefillah. And there is so much for all of us to know. I just went down, you're having a Shemus fair downstairs, I noticed. You're giving away Chelek Dalad Mishnah Berurah. I noticed that. So, Hilchos Erevin, maybe you don't have to know how to build an Erev. Somebody in town will build it for you. But I saw none of the other Halakhim of the Mishnah Berurah are on the table, because you need to know all that. You need to know Chelek Aleph, all about Hilchos Kriya Shema, Hilchos Tefillah, Chelek Beis, you need to know about Chelek Gimel, is all about Hilchos Shabbos, Chelek Dalad is all about Yom Tov and Pesach, Chelek Hey. Dalad is about Erevin. Hey and Vav is all about Pesach and Yamim Tovim. We have to know these halachas inside and out. And therefore, says the Maharil, because a woman is going to have those experiences, and we expect and anticipate that she's going to do them properly, obviously, we need to teach women everything they need to know. But says the Maharil, to go beyond that. For example, for a woman to learn something that is totally irrelevant to her life, just l'shem liman haTorah, says the Maharil. Of that, the Gemara says, this is something that perhaps we should not engage in. That's what the Maharil is of the opinion. Now we know that this really has changed. Although if you look in the Rama says, like this Maharil as well. As I mentioned, the Rama very often quotes the Maharil in many of his psukim. He quotes from the Chachmei Ashkenaz and often from the Maharil. And in Shulchan Aruch Yeradeh, the Rama assumes that women have an obligation to learn every part of Torah that is relevant to their way of life. A woman needs to learn. How many women here have learned chulin? Not yet, right? But you have to know Hilchos Kashrus. And the only way to know Hilchos Kashrus is by getting involved, by really understanding it, by really digging in, and by really having a deep appreciation for where the sugya starts, where the sugya ends, understanding how the halacha was developed and what the halacha lamaisa actually is as it continues to develop. And the Rama says that certainly we would have that obligation. And the Shulchan Aruch, in fact, writes the same thing as well. Shulchan Aruch very famously says in Siman Mem Zayin and Aruch Chaim that women have an obligation to make a bracha of Birchas HaTorah every morning. Now, why would a woman have an obligation to make a Birchas HaTorah? After all, the Gemara says women don't have an obligation to learn Torah. And the Gemara says maybe, perhaps, women should not be learning Torah. So why does the Shulchan Aruch say women should make a bracha of Birchas HaTorah every day? So some might mistakenly say the reason why is because, well, if I'm going to observe a mitzvah, then I have to make a Birchas HaTorah. Is that really true? Is that really true? So if you wake up in the morning and somebody gives you an emergency message that there's a sick person in the hospital and you need to drop everything and go take care of them, must you quickly make a Birchas HaTorah before running out to do that mitzvah? No. Birchas HaTorah is reserved for somebody who learns Torah. So obviously the Shulchan Aruch is of the opinion that a woman is assumed that she's going to be learning Torah. Interestingly, the Shulchan Aruch, any Sfardiyot in the room? Yeah? So, tell us, what is the psak of the Shulchan Aruch when it comes to a mitzvah that a woman is not obligated to do, but chooses to do so anyway? So the Sfardim are of the opinion, in line with what the Shulchan Aruch says, that she would not recite a bracha. So, let's say you went to hear the shofar in Rosh Hashanah, you would not make a bracha. If you shake lulav on sukkahs, which you don't have an obligation to do, you would not recite a bracha. Certainly you can volunteer to do the mitzvah, but the Shulchan Aruch says for the Sfardim that they should not recite a bracha. The Rama disagrees. The Ashkenazim follow the psak of the Rama. The Sfardim follow the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, of the Mechaber. That when you volunteer to do a mitzvah that you're not obligated to do, you do not recite a bracha. Well, if that's the case, why would the Shulchan Aruch say here that if a woman volunteers to learn Torah, she should make a Birchas HaTorah? That seems to go against everything that the Shulchan Aruch writes everywhere else for women who volunteer to do a mitzvah. And the answer is because this is not voluntary. The answer is the Shulchan Aruch is of the opinion that a woman must learn Torah with regard to everything that is relevant to her life. The same way that the Rama says that in Hilchos Talmud Torah and Yeridaya, so too the Mechaber is of the same opinion in Siman Mem Zayin and Or HaChaim as well. Now, as we know, in many of our schools, we do not always make sure to focus exactly on what is going to be relevant to our lives. Very often we learn other things. We learn Musar, we learn Machshava, we learn all kinds of areas of Torah, and we enjoy them, and we appreciate them, and we bask in the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's beautiful Torah. So you ask yourself, why do we do any of that? And the answer is, this is a very interesting discussion that began in 1918, when there was a lot of Haskalah going on in the world. The Chafetz Chaim was the leader of the generation. Chafetz Chaim passed away in the 1930s. And in 1918, the Chafetz Chaim was asked, what should we do? We have women who are educated in so many other disciplines. Are we going to remain illiterate? Are we going to remain completely unaware of all the different aspects of Torah and will become great scientists, and women are going to become educated in every other area of life except for Torah? Does that really make sense? It can't make sense. And the Chafetz Chaim unequivocally was of the opinion that we must begin to really encourage women to be involved in very serious Limud HaTorah in a way that they were never involved before. And he writes that the times have changed, and obviously we need to change as well. Now the Chafetz Chaim writes very beautifully about his opinion, about why he feels the times have changed, and why this needs to be the way it is. But certainly this has become standard and accepted practice all over the world, and we have been so encouraging of women's involvement in Limud HaTorah. And this is what makes us so proud. When you come to a gathering like this, and you have such wonderful opportunities to learn from such great teachers, both your male and female teachers, who give you so much of what they learned from those who came before them, and who give over to you the beauty of Torah and the essence of what Torah is all about, Ashreichem, how lucky you are that you spend an entire year focusing on all of this and enriching your lives, not only while you're here, but as you move forward as well. These are going to be the building blocks of your entire life, to be able to have a foundation of what Torah is all about, what it means to be a part of a Torah community. And not only that, actually, before I went to teach in Stern College, I really didn't have time to be involved in another endeavor at all. And I was actually very concerned about taking anything else on. My shul is a very robust shul. I don't know if there's anybody here from our community. Anyone? Yeah, some? Okay, I'll talk to you afterward. But there's a lot going on. We have over 1,000 families in my shul. There's just always something happening, and always multiple things happening, let me say. And Baruch Hashem, a lot of Torah to teach there. But somebody made a comment to me, which I was very, very touched by. And they said, if you go teach a man, so either he'll listen or he won't listen. Either he'll learn from you or he won't. Okay. You go to Stern College and you teach women, you will be the foundation of so many Jewish homes in the Jewish community. Because you are the foundation of a Jewish home. And your children will grow up, Emir Tashem, watching the way you observe Shabbos, the way you observe Kashrus, the way you observe all of the halachas that you learn. And it's important that you really have a full and deep and complete understanding of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of all of us. It's so important that a wife, that a woman, has the opportunity to elevate an entire home, and she does have the opportunity to do so. And that is a great gift that all of you have. And Yehi Ratzon, you should all take advantage of that incredible gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you. My father very often talks about, and I made a point when I started teaching in Stern College as well, I sometimes feel, you know, we learn Torah and we study and everyone's rigorous and academic and it's wonderful and it's great and we want to be involved. But I sometimes feel like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is missing from the equation. Like we learn Torah and we don't talk about why we learn Torah. We don't talk about why this is important for us. We don't talk about why this is the most essential endeavor that all of you should be involved in, at least in this stage of your lives. So I just feel it's important for a moment to digress. I don't know how much time I have. We're doing okay, Rabbi? It's okay? Just to digress into a discussion about that, because I think it's just critical every so often to remind ourselves why we do what we do, especially when we spend so much time doing it and we have such a focus, certainly when you're here for the year, and this is basically your singular focus. So let's ask ourselves, why are we doing this? So there's a fascinating Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin. The Gemara tells us about three different, very obscure esoteric halachos that lo haya velo asad liyos. These three halachos never happened and never will happen. One of them, the Gemara says, is the story of the Ben Sora Umar, Parshas Kisetze. So the Torah tells us a very unusual story about a young child right before his bar mitzvah, and he's a zolel, the sovei, and he's eating inappropriately, he's acting inappropriately, whatever it may be. And the Gemara says that his parents have to bring him to the Beis HaMikdash, and the Beis Din is going to administer the death penalty. It sounds very harsh, it sounds very cruel. And the Gemara says that this is such an unusual halacha, and the particulars of getting us to that point, it says that the parents have to have the exact same pitch of voice. We just can never have all the particulars come together, and therefore the Gemara says, although it's something we read about in Chumash, although it's something that the Gemara discusses at length, we have actually never had a Ben Sora Umar. This story never happened. Velo asa liyos, it's never going to happen. Secondly, the Gemara says, Ira nidachas. You have a beautiful city, flourishing Jewish community, and suddenly, Yatsu anashim b'nei b'liyal, the psukim tell us in Parsha Shoftim, that two nefarious people come into the city and begin to turn the whole city upside down, and suddenly a whole bustling Jewish community turns into a city of Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Says the Gemara, Hachrein tacharimeim, you have to knock out the whole city, burn it down to the ground. Even a discussion in the poskim, what do we do about the mezuzahs and the Sifri Torah and the shuls and the Batei Knesios, Batei Medrash? Do we burn everything? Burn the Sifri Torah also? Fascinating question. Not for now, but the Gemara says, either way, this is impossible. You're going to have a whole city that just started to serve Avodah Zarah, everyone? Till you have to burn it down to the ground, it can't be. And finally, the Gemara says, Bayis HaMenuga as well. The Gemara, the Psukim and Parshas Metzora tell us about a Bayis HaMenuga, which means you can have a person who has Tzaras, but you can have some kind of phenomenon of a Bayis HaMenuga, which means a house that has Tzaras. So the Gemara says, what does that even mean? How can you have a house that has Tzaras? We've all seen skin conditions before, but how do you have a house that has a condition? So the Gemara says that's true. Lo haya velo asavios. The whole story of Bayis HaMenuga never happened. It never will happen in the future. And ask the Gemara the obvious question. If these three halachas never happened and never will happen, then why are they quoted in the Chumash themselves? Do we not have enough to learn? Why are they there? Says the Gemara, Drosh v'kabel schar. Drosh v'kabel schar. Now I ask you. If I learn 15 hours a day. I don't know what your schedule is here, but say, for the big learners, right? If you learn 15 hours a day, it's a safe number. Less? More? Wherever it is, wherever you're up to. If I spend all of my time focusing, as the psukim tell us, Arucha me'eretz mida urechava mineyam. The Torah is so vast. There's so much to master, so much to learn. I'm never going to finish everything there is to know. Was the Torah worried that maybe I'd be bored? And you know what? We have three more halachas that we need to throw in there because maybe you're going to finish everything else and we're concerned. You're going to have nothing to do. So let's just make sure we talk about Bayis HaMenuga and we talk about Ben Sora Mor and we also talk about the third halacha of Irani Dachas because what are people going to do if they don't have an extra five Daf Gemara to learn? I think we'll all be fine. I think there are other things to learn. So what does this mean? This is the question of the Bala Tanya. The Bala Tanya wonders, why was it necessary to have these three halachos when there is no relevance to what it is that they teach us? And he develops the following theme. We said it this morning in our davening, Gadol Hashem u'mulul al miyod v'l'gdulaso ein cheker. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so beyond our understanding. We have no way of relating to the Ribono Shel Olam in simple terms. What does it even mean to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And the only way to have a relationship with him is, as the Bala Tanya writes, Tzimtzem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ritzono V'Chachmaso V'Taryak Mitzvos HaTorah V'Hilcho Sefer. The way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu presented his essence to us is by giving us his Torah. So you want to understand what God is about? Read his book and you'll come to an understanding of who he is. That, writes the Bala Tanya, is what it means. So whether this halacha is relevant or not relevant, the values and the messages that even these three irrelevant halachos teach us, give us a complete picture of what the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all about. And that really is important for us to understand, because that really is what Livan HaTorah is supposed to be for all of us. The Ramban, in his Akdama to his commentary on Chumash, quotes from a Zohar that Kol HaTorah Kula is Shmosav Shel HaKadosh Baruch. The entirety of Torah, the essence of Torah, is the description of who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. My father likes to say it over. Imagine you have a fifth grade teacher who's trying to teach the students about atomic energy. Obviously, the students do not have a mature enough brain to understand it in its full sense. Of course they can. And even if a person goes through high school, they still don't have a full understanding. This takes years and years for scientists to really come to a complete understanding, and then to give it over to us is obviously something that they have to break down into terms that we can understand. So when we try to teach it to children, what do? We take different colored balls, and we say the green one is the proton, and the red one is the neutron, and the third one is the electron, the blue one, and that's the way we understand it. Go to a real scientist and present those three balls, and they'll laugh at you. Why? Because obviously it's so much deeper than that. But in order for somebody who's just beginning to have an entree into the area of study that's being discussed, we need it to be brought down to our level of understanding. And that is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu presented himself. Like the Baal HaTanya writes, he presented himself by being mitzamtzem himself in the words of the Torah. And that is why it's so important and it's imperative for every Jew to study Torah, because we have the opportunity to come to an understanding of the essence of what the Ribono Shel Olam is when we study his Torah. When the Rambam in his Ikar HaEmunah, the Rambam in Ikar Tes, in the ninth of the Ikari HaEmunah says, Zos HaTorah Lo Tehei Mukhlefes. The Torah is immutable, the Torah is here forever, the Torah will never change, and in every generation it's relevant, and it will never change at all, not only in its content, but also in its style. The Torah is always going to be the same. Where does the Rambam know that from? He quotes such an unusual pasuk. Anybody know? Says the Rambam, how do I know Zos HaTorah Lo Tehei Mukhlefes? Because the Navi says in Sefer Malachi, Ani Hashem lo shinisi. I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't change. Therefore, says the Rambam, the direct corollary to that is, Zos HaTorah lo tehei mukhlefes. Since HaKadosh Baruch Hu's essence doesn't change, therefore, the laws of the Torah don't change, because the Torah is a representation of who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all about. And it's so important for us to really understand that, which is why the Maharshal has a fascinating comment, which is a little bit hard to understand. The Gemara tells us that on one occasion, there was a claim that there was major discrimination in Torah law against the Gentile community. And the Gemara says that some of the Chachmei Yisrael were called into a room and they were asked, tell us, what happens when one person's ox scores another person's ox? How much do they need to pay? What are they responsible for? What are they not responsible to pay? And what happens when a non-Jew is involved in the mix? Would the laws be the same or perhaps not? And we know from the Gemara Baba Kama, based on the Psukim, that it's not the same, that the laws will not be the same at all. And the Chachmei HaGemara responded that the laws will change. Obviously, when we're dealing with a non-Jew, it's not going to be the same as when we're dealing with a Jew. Now, ask the Maharshal. Their lives are being threatened by giving that answer. So it's very nice to be an honest Jew and to give the right answer, and to say exactly what the Torah says, but was that really smart? Did that make sense? We know that there are three mitzvahs that the Torah says in Maseches Avodah Zarah, we're told. Three mitzvahs I have to be willing to give up my life for. What are they? Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shfichas Damim. Should have asked this 40 minutes ago. Do I need to translate everything? Are we okay? Okay, sorry. One of the beauties of my class in Stern, I'll tell you the truth, they asked me if I would be okay with having some of the students from the Mechina program who have graduated the Mechina program come to my classes. And the Mechina program in YU is for students who went to public school and have no religious background at all. And they teach them really Mehakal El HaKavid. They start with very, very basic Judaism. And I guess I'm getting them in their final year in Stern College. I'm not sure exactly where they're up to. But I have a sizable group in my class in Hilchos Shabbos that are actually graduates of the Mechina program. So I have to translate everything, and I'm still getting used to it. I'm not so great at it, but I have to say that one of the girls in my class, and I'm so proud to say this, one of the girls in my class comes over every single week after class is over. I shouldn't say every week, every Tuesday and Thursday that I'm there. Literally every single class with practical questions. And I finally got into a discussion with her and I said, where are you from? What's the story? You know, these questions are so interesting. And she said, I'm the only religious member of my family. My parents aren't from, no one in my family is from, and where I live, nobody in my community is from. So everything I ask you is actually practical. I don't know anything. And I don't know what I'm supposed to do when I go back. And I said, if I came to Stern College just to make a hashba on this one kid, I don't think anyone else is gaining anything from me, but just on this one individual who's there, and who's such a mevakesh, who so much wants to know what the Dvar Hashem is. It's such an inspiration. It's just so inspiring to watch it and to be a part of it. I tell the other girls in the class, you have an opportunity to all make a hashpa on somebody else. You have an opportunity to really uplift other people and to really teach them what the Derech Hashem is. There are people who don't have the same background as some of us may have, and there are others who may not have the same experiences as some of us have. And it's a tremendous gift and a bracha that we have to inspire them. Either way, the Gemara says, what we were talking about here was, there are three mitzvahs HaTorah where we say that one is expected to give up their life. Avodah Zarah, Gili Arayos, and Shlichas Dam. So the Bali HaTos is asked, what if I had to say, you know, I love God so much, when it comes to something else, I want to give up my life also. So every single year, I'm in the middle of davening on Yom Kippur in my shul. So far, this has happened every year. I'm in the shul 8 years. Somebody runs in and says, we have a chola at home. The chola is refusing to eat. We need you to come to the house to talk to them. Okay. So I stop my davening in the middle. I leave shul. I go to this person's house. I sit down with them. And it's always very uncomfortable when a person is not feeling well on Yom Kippur and they have to eat. It's just, you know, we're not so comfortable with it. So one year, I go to somebody's house. The family, you know, explains to me, the doctor was there. Doctor says he absolutely has to eat. We even told him before Yom Kippur he has to eat. He's not listening to us. So he wanted to call in the reinforcements. So I start engaging this elderly gentleman in conversation. I said to him, you know, v'chai b'hem. Yom Kippur is Yom Kippur, but v'chai b'hem is even more important. And we have an obligation to make sure that we're healthy. He turns to me and he says, young man, I love you, but don't tell me what to do. So I said, what do you mean? He says, I survived Auschwitz. I fasted Yom Kippur every year of my life. And I'm not stopping now. So I don't care what you say. So he's wrong. But it was amazing. What am I going to say? But the bottom line is he's wrong. And that is that obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't expect us, nor do we have the right to volunteer to give up our lives for any of the other mitzvahs HaTorah. Well, if that is the case, says the Maharshal, let's ask ourselves a question. If you were one of the people who was called into the room by a Roman Caesar, and he asked you, what is the discrimination law in the Torah against us? If I'm involved in some kind of accident, in some kind of issue, how much money do I have to pay? And if two Jews are involved, how much money do they have to pay? Tell me the answer. Would you give the honest answer even if you knew that your life depended on it? Or would you say, maybe let's be smart. Maybe let's fudge it. Let's figure out how to give some kind of other answer that's really not the right answer. Just get ourselves out of here. Obviously the answer is we should lie. Says the Maharshal, why does the Gemara tell the story that they actually told the truth? Why would they do that? That doesn't make sense. The Maharshal explains a tremendous chiddush, where he says that this would constitute zirof haTorah, saying the wrong thing, giving the wrong answer, and misrepresenting the Torah would be tantamount to zirof haTorah, which basically means kfirah. Says the Maharshal, if the Torah represents God Himself, And you're now going to misrepresent the Torah means you are now misrepresenting the essence of God. That's kfirah. We have to give up our lives for Avodah Zarah, Kidei Rosh Vichasdamim. That is Avodah Zarah. To misrepresent God is Avodah Zarah. Says the Maharshal, that's why the Gemara says that they had no option other than to do exactly what they were asked to do, and that is to give the honest answer as they were supposed to. And that, I think, is a fascinating, fascinating answer that the Maharshal gives, which once again gives us an insight into what exactly it means when we talk about what Limud HaTorah is all about. It's fascinating that every morning in the Birchas HaTorah, when we say we want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give us the opportunity to understand Torah, we finish off by saying, Kulanu Yodei Shemecha. By learning your Torah, we will now be people who are not Yodei Sarasecha, but Yodei Shemecha. By learning your Torah, we will now come to an understanding of what your essence is, of who your name is, of what you represent. That's what Limud HaTorah is for. Is it not surprising that you look in the Bracha and Shemona Esrei where we talk about tshuva, and when the Gemara discusses all the different aspects of tshuva, there's so much to talk about, but here, when we talk about it in our Shemona Esrei, how do we introduce the word about tshuva? We say, Hashiveinu Avinu L'Sarasecha. Hashiveinu Avinu L'Sarasecha. When we're talking about tshuva, we're talking about returning to the Ribono Shel Olam, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why do we say, return us to your Torah? Because that is the way to return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You want to have a relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam, the only way to do it is Hashiveinu Avinu L'Sarasecha. That is the way that we come to an understanding of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all about. So that was just a small digression about what Limud HaTorah really is for all of us, and why it is that we study Torah, and how important and integral and essential it is that we give a focus to Limud HaTorah. I want to discuss now, just branch out a little bit more, about other areas of women's observance of various mitzvahs. I'm watching the clock. Just tell me when your next session is. I don't know. What's happening after? Great. Perfect. Okay. So now let's go to a very well-known Gemara Maseches Kiddushin Daf Chaf Tes. The Gemara says, this is a very well-known concept. Any mitzvah saseisha hazman grama, anything that is time-bound, we assume a woman would not have an obligation to observe that mitzvah. However, a man has an obligation to observe across the board. If I were to ask you without knowing anything, how many mitzvahs are there in that category of mitzvah saseisha hazman grama that a woman does not have an obligation to fulfill? Like around 100? Less. 50? Less than 50. How many do you think? What? 20? Less than 10. So the whole medubar, the whole discussion here, is talking about less than 10 mitzvahs. So take it easy, everyone. Take it easy, everyone. We're talking about less than 10 mitzvahs where there's a discrepancy between men and women. And not only that, the Rambam writes in one place in the Pirush HaMishnayos, I couldn't find it on the plane, but the Rambam does say that there are more exceptions to the rule than the rule itself. Right? So there are more mitzvah saseh shahazman grama that women do have an obligation to fulfill than the rule itself, which is that a woman does not have an obligation to fulfill mitzvah saseh shahazman grama. So what are some of the exceptions to that rule? I'm sorry, what is the rule? Where do we ever have a situation where a woman would not have an obligation? So we know that Sfiras HaOmer, maybe, that's not such a good example. Samachlokas HaRishonim, not a good example. I'm sorry that I started with a bad example. Tzitzis. So the Gemara says, Re'isa Moso Zechartem is called Mitzvah Hashem. Tzitzis is a mitzvah that is only applicable during the day, not at night. And as a result of that, it's considered to be a Mitzvah Hashem Shehazman Grama. Tefillin, also. V'shamarta zachuka azeh miyamim yamima, kriyas shma, tkiyas shofar on Rosh Hashanah, netilas lula besukah. All of these examples are mitzvot haseh shehazman grama, where a woman would not have an obligation to fulfill them. Rashi has a fascinating comment. Rashi writes in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Rashi is repeated again in Maseches Erev and Sadibah, where Rashi says that if a woman chooses to volunteer to do any of these mitzvahs, she is in violation of Bal Tosef. The good news is, we don't pass on Rashi. But it's fascinating to know that that's what Rashi says. Not only in one place, in two different places, Rashi says that if a woman chooses to fulfill any other mitzvah that she does not have an obligation to do, we assume that she would be in violation of Baal Tosef. Now, there are some mitzvahs say Shehazman Grama, which are clearly time-bound, and you cannot fulfill them any other time of the year, and yet we would assume that women certainly do share in the obligation off the bat. So, for example, the Gemara says in Pesachim Daf Mem Gimel, Achilas Matzah on Leil Pesach. A woman has an obligation to eat matzah on the night of the Seder, just like a man has the obligation. Isn't that a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama? You don't eat matzah on Hanukkah. You can't eat matzah on Rosh Hashanah. Obviously, the only time when there's a mitzvah to eat matzah is on Leil HaSeder. So why would a woman have an obligation? And the Gemara says, we have a hekesh, we have two psukim, where it says, Ba'erev tochlu matzos, we're told that we have an obligation on Pesach night to eat matzah. We're also told that you're not allowed to have chametz for the entire duration of Pesach. Says the Gemara, Kol sheyeshno b'bal tochal chametz, yeshno b'kum achol matzah. Whoever has an obligation not to eat chametz also has an obligation to positively go ahead and eat matzah. And as a result of that, the Gemara says women would certainly share the obligation of eating matzah, even though it's clearly a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. The Gemara Maseches Pesachim Daf Kuf Tes tells us that the mitzvah of Simchas Yomtiv is something that is shared both by men and by women. Now, how do we express our Simchas Yomtiv? That's a good question. So the Gemara says, Anashim B'roi Lahem, B'nashim B'roi Lahem. Men have one way in which they generally like to celebrate things, and women have other ways. Keep this in your back pocket. What does the Gemara say a woman should do in order to celebrate Yom Tov? So the Gemara says, most men enjoy Basar V'Yayin. I happen not to like wine. I'm underage. I'll get there someday. I'll grow up. I don't like wine. So most men, I think, probably do. So the Gemara says, therefore, their expression of Simchas Yom Tov is Basar V'Yayin. They need to have meat and drink wine. What is the way for a woman to express her Simchas Yom Tov? Says the Gemara, her husband has to make sure to buy her new clothing and jewelry. It's good to know. It's good to know. Why? Because most women in the world, obviously not everyone, but most women in the world would appreciate a nice piece of jewelry and a new article of clothing. And therefore, that would be their expression of Simchas Yom Tov. Says the Gemara, what about children? How should they experience Simchas Yom Tov? Says the Gemara, Klai Yisrael Gozim. They should have nuts and lollipops and candy. It was the same in the times of the Gemara as it is today. That is Simchas Yom Tov. Well, the Gemara seems clearly to assume that women have an obligation in Simchas Yom Tov, even though it's only on Yom Tov. And it's certainly a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. The Gemara says in Brachas Daf Chav that women have an obligation in Kiddush on Shabbos. Why do they have an obligation? Says the Gemara. We know Zachar v'Shamar v'Dibur Echad Nemru. It says, Shamar es Yom HaShabbos D'Kadsho. It also says, Zachar es Yom HaShabbos D'Kadsho. Why do we have this discrepancy? Says the Gemara, Zachar and Shamar are really coming to teach us that whoever is involved, whoever is included in Shamar es Yom HaShabbos D'Kadsho, which means that you're not allowed to violate Shabbos doing any malacha, so too they have a positive obligation to do Zachar es Yom HaShabbos D'Kadsho as well. And from there, the Gemara learned that they have an obligation of making sure that they make Kiddush on Shabbos. Beyond these specific examples that the Gemara gives, the Gemara then introduces us to another category, which is a very timely one. So we have a Gemara Maseches Pesachim Tzadi Tesem and Beis. The Gemara tells us that men and women share in the obligation to drink Dalet Kosos on Leil HaSeder. Where does that come from? Why would that be the case? Now, obviously, that is a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. Obviously, that is time bound. So why would women have an obligation to drink four cups of wine on Leil HaSeder? Anybody know? Yes? Excellent. So the Gemara says that there's a new concept we have to be aware of, and that is, Af hein hayu ba'osa hanes. Why do we drink four cups of wine in the first place? The Gemara says it's to commemorate Yitzias Mitzrayim. Well, men and women were equally involved in this great miracle of Yitzias Mitzrayim, and as a result of that, we have to do something to highlight the fact that we were all set free, and we are now the nation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu who celebrates freedom. And as a result of that, the Gemara says men and women both share equally in the obligation of the mitzvah of Dalet Kosos. That extends beyond the mitzvah of Dalet Kosos. There are another two examples. Anybody know what those other two examples are? Yes? I'm sorry? Lighting candles on Hanukkah and?
The mitzvah on
Purim, correct. So women have an obligation to read the Megillah on Purim. Women have an obligation to also light Hanukkah candles as well. Because they were also involved in these great miracles. Tosis asked the question. There are so many times throughout our year when we say Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. You ever notice? It's like a recurring theme about everything. Sukkot, Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. Everything is Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. Tosis asked the question, well, why is it that women don't have an obligation in everything because of Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim? And if they were there by Yetzias Mitzrayim and they also experienced the miracle, then why should they not have an obligation because of Afen Hayibos Hanes? Very obvious question. Why is it only limited? The Gemara only says this principle when it comes to Dalet Kosos on Leil HaSeder, when it comes to Neiros Chanukah, and when it comes to Mikra Megillah. What about everything else that is also Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim? My father says over in the name of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik a very fascinating idea, and that is that there are many different times throughout the year when we highlight the fact that a miracle happened. It's Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, but there are very few times during the experience of our year when we do something different, and that is we are mefarsim the nes. Neiros Chanukah, it's important that we do the mitzvah not only to ourselves, but also that we show others that we do it pursuing nisim. Mikra Megillah is the same. Although making a breakaway shul is never a good thing, the Shulchan Aruch says, Berovam Hadros Melech, we should all daven together, it's a beautiful thing to daven as a group. But technically, if people want to daven in their own home, they can. It's okay. When it comes to Purim night, when everyone has to lay in the Megillah, the Shulchan Aruch clearly says, then we need to come together as a larger group because Berov Am Hadras Melech is not the only principle. There's something beyond that, and that is Persume Nisa. We're not just commemorating the fact that a miracle happened. We're not just saying this is Zecher L'Nes. We are saying we have to be Mefarse in the Nes. We have to do something unique and special to show to the eyes of the community that this is what we're doing. And the same on Leil HaSeder. Did you ever notice? We say a special bracha on Chanukah, on Purim, and on Pesach. Anybody ever notice that? She'asa nisim avoseinu, right? We make a special bracha. On Leil HaSeder we say, Asher ga'alanu v'ga'alas avoseinu mimitzrayim. That is the she'asa nisim. Because on those three opportunities, on those three experiences, we are being mefarsei in the nes. We're going way beyond. We're not just doing something zecher the nes, we are being mefarsei in the nes, and therefore we assume that men and women share equally in this obligation. I see we have to wrap it up already now, but I just think what's important for us, and there's so much more to talk about in all of these different categories, and what men and women have an obligation or perhaps don't, and what is considered to be a time-bound mitzvah and what is not. Let me just leave you with maybe one interesting discussion here. What would you say about the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer? That was the mistake I made before. So that's actually a dispute in the Rishonim. I would have said it should be obvious that Sfiras HaOmer is something that is a time-bound mitzvah. After all, it's Sfiras HaOmer. You can only count the Omer in a very specific time of the year. If I count 49 days now, that's not really going to have any meaning, any value. So what would you say when I'm talking about Sfiras HaOmer? I would say that a woman probably does not have an obligation to count Sfira, and yet the Ramban very famously says that Sfira HaOmer is something that a woman would have an obligation to do because it is not a mitzvah sasesha hazman grah. How can that possibly be? So the Dibri Malkiel, one of the Gdoli Achronim, writes that, okay, very simple, whenever you have a problem in the Rishonim and you don't know how to explain it, just write, it's a talus sofer, talus atfus, it was a mistake. He doesn't mean it's a mitzvah sasesha hazman grah, he means it's... It means women are not obligated because the mitzvah says she has man grama. It's one easy way out of it. But if you don't want to accept that it's just a tos hatfus, how do you explain your Ramban? So a lot of the great Gedolei Achronim say perhaps the reason why Sfiras HaOmer, according to the Ramban, might not be a mitzvah says she has man grama is because what is the catalyst for the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer? What gets Sfiras HaOmer rolling? You always thought the reason why we start counting Sfiras HaOmer on that particular day is because Tezayin Nisan is the first day that we start counting Sfira, right? After the first day of Pesach. No, incorrect. The reason why we start counting Sfira is because we bring the Karban HaOmer. The Karban HaOmer has to be brought on Tezayin Nisan. That so happens to be. But the Karban HaOmer is really what gets the whole process rolling, what gets the whole ball rolling for Sfiras Omer, and therefore, Sfiras Omer per se is not a mitzvah saseh shazman grama. It so happens that every year we start Sfiras Omer and Tetzai Nisab that has nothing to do with that day. It's only because we bring the Karban Omer on that day. And the Achronim argue, and it has ramifications in other halachas as well, would we say that every single thing that we do at a particular time in the year is considered to be a Zman Grama, or perhaps not? And that's something to think about. Maybe the catalyst for this particular mitzvah is not the day, but some other activity that happens to fall out on this day. And therefore, perhaps it would render this particular mitzvah as something which is not Zman Grama. What I think is important for all of us to walk away with is, time is very important. Time is very important. Which mitzvahs we're obligated to observe and which perhaps not is a detail. But what's very, very important is Zman Grama. Time can be so valuable. It's our most valuable asset that we have. And we need to make sure to use it wisely. We know that every Shabbos and every Yom Tov, we say Kiddush and we mention Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. So on Shabbos it makes sense. It's Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot are all Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. How do you explain Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? How are Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim? In what way do they remind us of the experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim? We blow the shofar, reminds us of Yetzias Mitzrayim. What's the connection to Yetzias Mitzrayim? Perhaps the answer is, the first mitzvah we accepted when we came out of Mitzrayim was HaChodesh Azelachem Rosh Chodesh. The Sfarno explains, other Mefarshim say the same, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to teach us the marked distinction between someone who is in captivity, someone who is enslaved, and someone who is a Ben Choron, is their ability to choose how to use their time. When I'm an Eved, I don't have the ability to say, this is what I want to do now. My master will tell me how to spend my time, whether I like the activity that I'm being asked to do or not. This is what I have an obligation to do. It's an expectation of me. When we became B'nai Chorin, when we were taken out of Mitzrayim, the first mitzvah HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us is HaChodesh HaZelachem. Now you are given the ability to use your time however you choose to do so. And not only that, you also have the ability to consecrate time, to be Mekadosh Lizman. And that is the great gift of being B'nai Chorin. And that is why we talk so many times throughout the year about this concept of Zecher LeYetzias Mitzrayim. Because a Jew always needs to remind themselves of the importance and the value of time. And time is something that you have all made a decision to spend here, consecrating, being Mekadesh Yisrael LeHazmanim, infusing yourselves with the sanctity of Kedusha, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as you learn His Torah. You become infused with the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Himself. And as a result of that, you are infusing your time with such sanctity and such holiness. Yehi Ratzon, you should have the opportunity to continue to spend your time wisely, to continue to grow, to always have she'ifos, to always look up, and to always want to accomplish more. I saw the beautiful wall downstairs. If you reach higher, the stones on top are a little bit rougher, but you'll get there. You'll get there. We've all been there. And Baruch Hashem, you'll see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you the opportunity to feel His presence as you continue to embrace a life of Him and His Torah. So it's a pleasure to meet all of you. Thank you so much again for having me. I wish you all.
We'd like to thank Rav Shechter and Shlita for sharing words of Torah and halacha and inspiration. If you just have a seat for one moment.